Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your favorite Stitch Witch, crafter, and lover of looms, Mikala Ann. On this week's episode, we have guest Sydney of Lady Melandra, here to discuss the webs we weave, magic that pours from the fingertips, and the creation of the most adorable spirit homes I've ever seen. Being an episode about the magic we make with repetitive movements of the hand, we spend a lot of time talking about birthing art and giving form for spirits to take shape, while also making time to give some practical advice and hands-on experience of what this process might look like. There's lots of love in this episode, and I'm excited for everyone to hear about the work Sydney does. I hope that this episode as a whole gives you feelings of warmth and inspiration, as I know it did for me. If you find this podcast interesting and want to show some support, consider checking out the Patreon at www.patreon.com/saturnvox. I can also be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at SaturnVox.
I'm Sydney. I do work with Lady Melandra, and I like crocheting and making things. So this is an awesome, awesome way to share more of that with everybody else.
Yay! Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do too. So I thought that it would be perfect because I know very few other people who do stitch witching, even though you'd think that it would be more popular than it is.
Yeah, I love it, and it's part of how I grew up and how I think about things. So if we can get more people to do it too, then great.
Awesome. Yes, I agree. That's a somewhat kind of segue into the first question I wanted to ask. What first drew you into crochet? Is it like ancestral? Was it a childhood hobby? And then at what point did it kind of occur to you to combine magic with the crochet?
I have been doing all types of crafting work since I was like really, really little. I had a great aunt named Jean who I adored. I spent a lot of time with her, and that's what she did. She had her own sewing room. She crocheted herself. And I was always making those friendship bracelets with the little knots. So eventually she told me I needed to start crocheting, and I told her no. I would start the first line of the stitch and then take it out and then do a chain stitch again and then take it out. And she was like, you should just do it. I'm like, no. I won't do that. I'll just make 50 million friendship bracelets for no one forever. So no. But maybe way, way later in life, after she passed, it just kind of reappeared. She kind of started talking to me again. And I had a lot of time on my hands. I was locked in my house for like a year. And I was like, maybe I should do this thing that she told me to do a long time ago. And it kind of clicked. I have only been crocheting for about 3 or 4 years now. And it's just, my hands do the things, and I don't really know what's going on. I usually think that she's talking to me while I do it and helps me kind of figure out the shapes and the patterns and that kind of thing. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started.
Wow, that's so beautiful. So it really is very much an intimate ancestral practice for you, so much that the inspiration is even coming directly from the ancestors.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love that. Another thing I thought was interesting about what you just said is I never thought about it, but those friendship bracelets are magical intentions that you're nodding into the bracelet. And it's very much that young girls practice witchcraft without knowing that they're doing it, just intuitively.
Absolutely. I did every single one of those. The friendship bracelets, the plastic ones, the like loop weaving things and gave everyone pot holders. Like, I was that person, and I have been that person my entire life. And this is just the first time I'm actually sharing it with people outside of my family and with the greater world in general, with more intention behind it.
Amazing. So in what ways do you think that the act of stitching kind of helps the practitioner engage and harness and direct their intentions while they're doing spell crafting?
It's so physical. So that's what I think about when I'm doing it. Like, it's coming from my hands. And even the more that I do it, the more intentional the practice becomes. Like, the crochet hook that I use is made out of ebony, and it's kind of like a wand. So, like, you have this thing where it's all coming together from your hands and from your energy and from, like, what you're doing while you're thinking about stuff, what you're doing in the background. Like, I have all these different things that I play in the background while I'm making things. It just kind of concentrates everything that's going on into each stitch. So if you can really harness that and be intentional about it, you can pull some of that stuff into it as you're stitching.
Oh, yeah, I love that idea. Here's something that I go back and forth between when I'm doing my own, like, kind of stitch witching is sometimes I'll be extremely intentional about it and I will, like, say a mantra with every stitch. And other times I'll just be, like, vibing, like, listening to music, just, like, letting myself feel relaxed and chill, or even, God forbid, watching TV while I'm doing it. And it's hard for me to say whether one version is more powerful or the other, but I do notice a slight difference in the energy of the finished product depending on how I was making it.
That's true. I actually do both of those for different things. So the intentional sitting and kind of meditating, I use those for the pocket spells that I have, where they have a lot more density because they're so small, right? Like, they're little small things. They're little small charms inside of a bag that you're kind of, like, concentrating all of that stuff into. But with the stuffed animals that I make, it is their process. I'm just getting them here. So usually something will happen where it's like, oh, I feel like watching this movie in the background. And it's not coming from me. It's coming from what I'm making, because they have their own personalities. They have their own wants and needs and what they want stitched into them. So I end up watching the most random stuff depending on which animal I'm working on at the moment.
Wow. So it's almost as if the animal is presenting its personality to you by saying, be engaged in this.
Yep. Yep. That's all part of it.
That's so cool. We kind of skipped over this in the intro part, but can you explain to our audience about the, I think you call them squish babies or?
So many different names. Like, there's one name that I'm kind of holding on to until I can, like, maybe copyright it, because that would be fun. But I call them animal squishes for everyone right now. But they're about, like, 18 inch tall, kind of big, stuffed animals that are different animals that come through. Like, they have their own order. They want to be with their own people. I just get them here. So that's kind of one of my bigger offerings. They started off a couple years ago. I started making them for someone's kid, actually, my coworker's kid. I made her a stuffed lion because she was turning one, and I was, like, doing all this crochet stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I can make a stuffed animal. It'll be cute. And I put stuff in it. I put, like, leaves and herbs and spices inside of this lion, gave it to my friend to give to her kid. And she was like, cool. No, I'm going to keep this on my desk. I'll name it. It'll be a thing. And I'm like, but it's for the bit. She's like, yeah, no, I don't care. I don't care. This is my stuffed lion, and my lion helps me get through my day at work. And that's where he's going to stay. And then, like, I made another one, and then I made another one for someone else. And then a friend of mine wanted a turtle while I was making a turtle for another friend. So they ended up being twin turtles with stuff in them. Like, it kept happening. I decided to go with it rather than trying to figure it out or fight it. And the animals come when they want to. They tell me what they want to be inside of them. They are finished on whichever day they tell me they want to be finished on. They're different sun signs. Like, it's just, what it does now. And they're kind of a cross between a stuffed animal and a familiar, because they do talk to people and they do ask for things. So that's kind of fun when people get one. They're like, ah, this thing is telling me what its name is. I'm like, it's what it's supposed to do. This thing is asking me for clothing. I'm like, yeah, it does that. Don't worry about it. It's its own little spirit. Let it work. But they're kind of quiet in the background helpers rather than like an active familiar in some of the traditional ways.
Wow, there's something so beautiful about this, because it's almost as if you tap into something liminal, animal energy just kind of passing by, and then it notices that you can notice it. And it says, hey, I actually want to be more present in the physical. Can you make me a home? And then it's like you're crafting them a home to live in. Some metaphor there about being able to take the liminal and weave it into the physical reality.
They're connected to dead. Like, I know that. I know that other people know that. So it's kind of this fun necromantic practice too, where there's something to do with ancestors, people's dead, other folks's big dead around them. Like, they all kind of come through in that way too. So it's fun to see like this kind of almost additive practice where like this thing comes in and then this thing comes in, and the animal is there, yes, but they also have these like human-like qualities in some ways. They ask for different human tools to be put inside of them so they can work those things. So it's almost like building a spirit body, and that animal is a totem for this spirit body that it's encapsulated inside of.
Amazing. So when you say things like, oh, they have specific sun signs, do you feel like that is something they tell you, or do you conceive of making them in a specific season, and then that is their sun sign?
They tell me when they want to be made. So again, like, I just get them here. I listen. I like listening to spirits and working with them. So I'm actually working on a flamingo right now. And the flamingo said, I am an Aquarius. And I'm like, I don't care. Sure. Why? Like, okay. But they end up getting really specific the more that I work on them. Like, eventually they all tell me what day they want to be born on, like the date that they want to be born on, and like the hour that they want to be stuffed in. Like, there's a whole kind of, we're going to concentrate it all the way down to the planetary hour that they get really specific about sometimes that I just don't control.
Have you ever like looked up the day and the hour and the time and like thrown an electional chart for them? Just to see, and it's like, oh, this one is definitely Saturn ruled, or this one is definitely a moon baby.
I've tried through geomancy, and they just shut it down every time. They don't like that process. They don't like me knowing ahead of time how to like play them or figure them out or whatever. It was very weird. It was just like, no, you don't get to shortcut this. You just have to listen, and then will happen.
I wonder if a part of that is because they're not meant for you. Like, you are just kind of the priestess birthing them to go to who they're supposed to go to. And that's really the person that they're meant for.
Absolutely. There's a lot about that. They're very interesting in that they talk to me while I have them. But then once they're gone, they're gone. And that's something that people have noticed with them often, is that they disappear. Once they find their person, I might get one or two pictures in the beginning, and then no one ever sees them or hears from them ever again.
Wow, that's actually good, though, for a person who's involved in necromancy and, like, working with other people's dead, that you don't have to worry about anything lingering behind.
Once they're gone, they're gone.
And so they're always someone who they were just meant for. Like, you may not know who the dead is at first, but once it's purchased, it was like that person was always meant to have them.
Well, it's also a divinatory process. So I have a form online that people can sign up, and they can like say that they want one. And as they're coming through, as they're being made and finished, I'll message everyone that's on the list, like, does this feel like yours? And people say yes or no. And then they sit with one of my spirits for a bit. And during that process, I end up asking whoever said yes if that animal wants to go with them. So the animal gets the last say on who they go with.
So do they sometimes say no?
Absolutely. They're just like, no, I'm not going to this person, and I'm not going to this person, and I'm not going to these three people. I don't care. I'm staying here. And I'm like, but this is... That's my deal with them. Like, if I make you, you have to give me some kind of financial compensation because this is materials and time, and you have to find your person. You cannot live here forever.
Yeah.
And that's the conversation I have with all of them, especially since I have my own and I don't need another one. Like, done. So, yeah, eventually they all have to find their person, and they do. Some of them within, like, the first hour of posting them. Some of them before I even get to posting them. Some of them stay for a month and haven't found their person, and then someone randomly will be like, hey, what's that? And then that's it. So it's a matching thing. It's very much matching the animal to the person they're meant to be with, and I am horrible about guessing who it is. I never know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not you making that decision.
Exactly.
Oh, this is so fascinating to me. So when they are birthed and they become like yours, do people tend to keep them on their own altar and like give them their own offerings, or do some people become aware that it's their ancestors and then it gets moved to like the ancestor altar? Or
it's a like half and maybe third of that, right? So they're not necessarily animals to be worshipped. They're supposed to be more like house spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And they like sleeping by people. Like that is the thing that they have across the board. Like they want to be in people's bedrooms, near their beds. Like they're squishy, so they also like sleeping with people. A lot of people say that they help protect against nightmares or like help people get through dreams in a different way. Yeah, I know. It's like, it's very much stuffed animal vibes, but then also it's a spirit that does this thing. So they like to be where people work too. So if you get one, they end up moving around the house. I have one person that I'm a lot closer to that I can see their stuffed animal a lot more often. And that friend moves around the house, like from floor to floor all day. Like, I'm going to be here while you're working. I'm going to be here while you're doing divination stuff. I'll be here while you're with your ancestors. And then I'm going to go to sleep and I'll be with you then. So it's that kind of background loving entity that can be with you quietly wherever you are. And there are some people that do a little bit more. Like there's one that had its own little spot and meditation pillow. And he didn't go anywhere except from the meditation pillow to the bed and back. And there's another person that put them with their like ancestor's bear that they had gotten from someone. So it was like this kind of stuffed animal little spot for them. It just depends. It depends on what people need. It depends on what the energy that animal has and what they want to do in the world. And it's that relationship between the person and the animal that they build between them that I don't even get to hear all of. So it's kind of cool that people just take them and go.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me a little bit of Calvin and Hobbes and just this like idea of going on adventures through life with your familiar, like you said, because there are just house spirits or familiars that can play with you, but also protect you, but also help give you wisdom, but also keep you safe when you're scared.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of their function. I know that someone said maybe a while back, like, is it for childhood trauma? And sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it is helping adult people work through some stuff that came up in childhood. I've given one to one child that's very witchy child, so I'm not worried about it. But usually people are like, I want to give this for my kid. And I'm like, no. No, this is not quite the match for a young person whose parents don't have a ton of witch work or sorcery work in the home. Like, it's not a cute thing. It will start talking to you and it'll be weird. So, Also, it might have graveyard dirt in it or something else. Like, you never know. Not for children.
Graveyard dirt, not for children. So that was something that you realized later. I find that very interesting because the first one was maybe in your mind, you thought it was for a baby and then it ended up being for the mom.
Exactly. Yep. It's not, it's what the magic is supposed to do. And that's what my magic ends up being a lot of anyway, like very unassuming, cute things or pretty things. And then people get it and they're like, oh, what is this? And I'm like, you said you wanted it. Yes, this is what it does. I don't lie. It just looks pretty.
Yeah. Well, I think hopefully people are starting to understand this on a deeper level now that we're having such an intense Venus and Capricorn transit. But she can be chthonic as fuck.
Yeah.
I think people always want to think about Venus as like her being birthed out of the sea imagery. And they don't remember that she's also the worms and the fertilizer and all the Karen-type animals who help perpetuate life. You know, that is a part of life. That is a part of her being able to give life, is to have things that are dirty and that consume filth. That's all a part of her mysteries.
Right. It's the life and death process, like over and over again. How do you birth things out of the dead? Is so where I like sitting in a lot of my work. But, you know, everyone can have their own experience with it. I'm just not going to give it to someone 7-year-old for, like, their birthday.
Yes.
And there's some animals that I just, they haven't come through as being safe to make yet, which has been really interesting. Like, someone wanted a pig for their kid, and I'm like, pigs eat humans. I am not giving a child a pig stuffed animal with some like heavy magic stuff happening in it, because they will eat your child. No.
Yeah, you have to have a very strong temperament to run with boars.
Yeah. And it's not taken that lightly, I think, in the way that I do it. And there are things that, like, people, even if they do take them lightly, they'll get this animal and they're like, whoa, stuff is happening in my house. And I'm like, yeah, I gave you a heads up on that. So good. It probably should be happening if this is who you matched with.
So to what degree were you already doing things like necromancy and spirit work? Or did that also birth as a part of this process?
I have been on the sidelines around a lot of people that have done this for a very long time. And that's kind of what I've been thinking through myself lately. I've been going through my own childhood stuff and figuring out where all these little pieces started fitting together. My family has been like people that just happen to know stuff. And like one of those, like, we don't talk about it, but I just happen to know what you're thinking right now. Or that was your great-grandmother that just jumped into your body and said something and then left. Like, that's just the way that people would talk in our family. And they would deal with it, usually, or sometimes, everybody dealt with it in their own way, with, like, maybe drinking or drugs to kind of shut it down. And I started reading tarot in high school. Like, instead of eating lunch, I would just do tarot readings. Because I was that
We've kid. All been there.
Yeah. And people were like, this is really scary. You have to stop now. And I'm like, what? Like, I just told you what the thing said. Like, it's no big deal. This is all fun. But it wasn't fun. It was accurate and really weird. So I had to stop. And I got back to it in high school and grew up in the Catholic neighborhood, even though I wasn't Catholic. And it kind of kept coming back and forth over time. And I would say 2016, 2017 is when it all started really clicking, to the point where I needed to actually start working with spirits and dead so I didn't trip out myself. And that's when it all kind of like popped open. And I've been intuitively finding things and falling into big initiations out of nowhere. Like, it's just been the way that the life is going. And that's where I kind of have to trust that path and trust my ancestors and trust the deities and spirits that I work with, that I am finding the right place for me. And it's just happening. Like, it's not planned. It's not something I went looking for. It's just been 7 years of happening at this point.
One thing that I've learned is that we have to be able to sit in these spaces where we feel uncomfortable if we want to progress in our ability, especially to divine and to communicate with spirits, because it does just feel so unnatural. And a lot of us who are or who do it naturally have spent a lot of their life trying to run away from it. So what I've learned is the way that I know whether something is wrong or right for me is not whether I feel uncomfortable. It's what starts happening in my life after I start embracing whatever it is that's making me uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
And that sounds like what you're talking about here, like you were afraid of your interactions with them, so you kept trying to hide from it, but that was never something that was possible, so it was consuming you. And then you finally just had to give in, and then all of a sudden you were pushed into other initiatic traditions that could help you gain more control in a safe way.
That is a better way of saying that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I'm very happy that that happens to people, and I think it's a way that we can kind of discern whether we should initiate into a tradition. It's like, is my life getting better? Or do I still feel depressed? Do I still feel chaotic? Do I still feel whatever? And that's a good way to know whether the spirit that you're talking to is actually being honest with you as well. Because if you decide to start working with it and your life gets better, there you go. If it gets worse, it's probably eating you.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And these stuffed animals have been so good for other people and good to me. Like, I have my own. She's wonderful. She actually starts introducing me to animals in dreams sometimes, and it gets really weird where I'm like, what is this? Why is a snail turning around and showing me its like little backside? Cool. Thank you. Can we go now?
But that's amazing though, because it's like you now have a personal guide who can then introduce you to other spirits. It's almost like having a badge that says, like, I am worth you talking to other spirits because I have this relationship with another spirit you respect.
Right. I still haven't figured out where they came from yet. Like, that's still kind of the bigger idea of, like, one day it'll all be revealed where these entities have decided to show up from. But until then, it's cool to have my own that can, like, say, okay, this one's next. Or if I have like questions about like, this is not safe, I can't put this in this. And then I can ask my own and she's like,
So does that happen sometimes where what the spirit that you're creating wants, then your spirit helper will say, look, it's not good for you to do that right now?
It's not even not good for me. It's more like, this isn't going to be good for humans.
Mm.
But there are some spirits, like I just made a giraffe and the giraffe was awesome and the giraffe wanted something in it that I was like, that's a little dicey. Maybe not. Like, maybe we don't want that to be in someone's life. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
Or like the rooster that I made right before the giraffe wanted nails inside of it. And I'm like, you can't put nails in a stuffed animal because it could poke people. I love you. No. So at least I have my own that I can check with to make sure that I'm not overstepping and taking things away for safety reasons rather than, you know, just letting it go.
Yeah, I love how this is also a really good example of setting boundaries with the dead and with spirits. Instead of just being like, oh my God, you're talking to me. I need to do everything that you say because this is so fantastical. I think people make that mistake a lot when they first start working with spirits, is just blindly saying yes to everything because it feels so surreal. Spirits may not understand what we understand in the material plane as well, and you sometimes do just have to be like, that's not fucking practical.
Exactly, right? Like, I understand why you want this thing because it's going to help you do something that you need to do with this person, but physically, a nail will stab someone. So no, we can try to work around and get something else in here that might get the same energy that you want to put in it, but it can't be like three long carpenter nails. No.
So then the process that you usually take from there is to kind of create some sort of middle ground between you and what the spirit wants?
Usually, yeah. Like, we can kind of work it out, and usually it's during a very, like, that's one of the hardest times for me, because everything else has to shut down when I'm stuffing them, because they have packets inside of them with herbs, and then they have other materia around that packet, and they have, like, a heart. Everyone has a heart. Literally, they all have a heart. Yes. But I have this one Etsy shop, Lucid Dawn Creations, that I'm like, and I get all my hearts from you. You never see them because they're inside animals. But yeah, and they're all different crystals too. So they're like crystal hearts that have their own energy.
Oh my God. So they're not like, because I really was thinking about the little cloth Build-A-Bear heart. You're talking about stones that are shaped like hearts. And the what the stone represents is picked by the spirit.
Yes.
What an amazingly creative and just beautiful idea. I love everything about this.
They figured it out for me. Like, this was, I was making hats and blankets and kind of little soap bag thing. Like, I was making a whole bunch of other stuff that I was trying to figure out how to spend my time, especially during the beginning of the pandemic. Like, what do I need to do with my time? Mm-hmm. And they came along maybe right before it, and I was already making them, but the focus turned a little bit during the pandemic when I had more time and when it became more urgent to, like, do more of them. And people were trying to commission them at first, and then that didn't work because I don't have control in that same way. Like, if you want me to make a specific thing with stuff in it and the spirit is like, I don't want that stuff in it, you can't have two people trying to go through me to have a conversation about what goes inside of it. So that became a different way of working where I'm like, I'm just working with this spirit and whoever you belong to, you will go to. But humans can't have input on it. Not even me at this point.
Yeah, that sounds like the best way to make something like this, though, is if it is meant to be a spirit house for the spirit, then the spirit needs to be the one comfortable living in it.
Exactly. And have what they need to work, right? Like, because the herbs and the different things that go in it are all about what they need to do and what they need to have and able to be able to do the work that they want to do.
So do you have any that just kind of hang around and say, it'll be my turn someday, but, like, not yet, and I'm just, like, kind of watching?
Yep. I have a whole list of, like, eventually you'll get made. I don't know why you showed up, but sure. Sure. You can go on the list. That's fine.
And do they hang around after that, or do they just, like, kind of pop in to say, put me on the list, I'll be back later?
The second, they really do just say, like, one day I'll be there, but bye. And then they just disappear. It's really fun. Like, it's so not about me. And the only reason why they talk to me is to get made. And then they stop talking to me.
So was this natural, or did you have to build up protective stuff in order to keep it so safe?
It's natural. It's part of the process. And I think that it's because of the way that familiars usually work, right? Like, usually, you don't tell people who your familiar is. You don't tell them their name. You don't have people see them. Like, they're kind of quiet, personal spirits that are in the background that you know that you're doing things with. But not everybody in the world needs to know them, see them, hear them, all that kind of stuff. The only reason why I know all of their names is because of the contract that I have with them. Once you name them, they are yours. Or once they tell you their name, because you don't name them, they tell you. But once they tell you their name, tell me their name so I can be like, cool, that severs the tie and we're good. Like, you're adopted, you have a home, you have a name. I don't need to hear about you or hear from you ever again.
And do you feel like just the intuitive knowing that that was the appropriate contract to set to keep your own space clear, did that, like, come from your spirits or your ancestors or from your squish baby?
It came from them, right? Like, and it was kind of a phenomenon in the beginning because I wanted to hear more about them and what was going on. And, you know, like, yay, I made this thing and now it's in the world. Like, it's great. I was super excited. They would disappear. And then I'd be like, are you all okay? Like, are we good? Like, is everything okay? And then people will come back like, oh yeah, sure, it's great. And I'm like, oh, I just don't need to know. Okay, fine, that's fine. If this is the way it goes, this is the way it goes, especially with people that were outside of my circle. Because that's the beauty of Instagram, right? Like, you have these people that you've touched in different ways over time, or someone knows someone or whatever. And there were people getting them off of one post in Instagram. And then I would be like, okay, sure, I don't know you very well, but here you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I found you. I saw one of a peacock, and I am, like, obsessed with peacocks. So when I saw that, I just was like, follow, subscribe.
It's cool. Instagram is a good tool. Like, I'm not mad at it. It's just, it's a very interesting public space for spirits that don't like to be as public. So that's a different kind of thing that I have to navigate too. Like, some of them, when I post them, three of their pictures will black out because they don't want to be seen. One can be seen, but not the rest. Or, like, they don't want people to know everything that's in them. There's a lot of that that happens often, especially if they get adopted before I get to posting. Mm-hmm. They'll just be like, we're good. We don't have to. Nope.
So you don't even post them on Instagram if they sell through the wait list first?
Sometimes I do. I ask the person and I ask them, like, is it okay? Because it does help other spirits get adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, like, the different ones, and then you see, like, oh, this isn't mine, but I get this feeling. It helps kind of prime people that should probably get one later on. So in that way. But, like, the last one I made was for someone very personal, and I'm like, all right, no one gets to see it. You get to see it in stories, maybe, as it's getting made, but other than that, never will be posted.
Okay. I love how they're all different. They all have different functions and different personalities, and that sounds so very special. So just to shift gears a little bit, I want to go back into kind of the art of weaving as, like, a mythical metaphor. Because that's clearly a large part of what you're doing with the Squish Babies. Do myths of weaving play a large part into your, you know, universal cosmology and spiritual beliefs?
Yeah, they do. I love them. I've always loved them, even when I was a kid. Like, that felt like home to me. Whenever there were myths about, like, someone weaving, or even, like, hair, or cutting, or... like, those kind of more feminine, more femme, like, versions of magic have always called out to me, because those were the women that I was more, like, hanging out with in my house, right? Like, my great aunt was the one that did all the sewing and crafting and making things out of nothing with her hands. And my grandmother was the one that was cooking all the time to feed the people. So those things have always been, like, part of my world. And I think last year I started working with Venus a lot more, and that came up too, where it's like, this crafting is important. The craft of, like, making something from thread, or, like, the weaving things or knotting things, and weaving is different than knotting, and they have different ways of forming. Like, there's something really special about that you can't do with other stuff. It's not as tactile. It's not as, like, absorbent, because you're also, like, putting in your own energy, but also, like, sometimes your own, like, just hand prints all over something as you're making it, because you have to touch it over and over and over again, and touching with intention makes a difference.
Yeah, and I think it helps remind you that the material world is just as sacred as the liminal or the cosmic astral plane or whatever, and that there is something so beautiful about the material world in a way that it's almost more closely connected to the divine, because it is this final representation of the divine's energy and the culmination of everything that the divine could be. Even though that makes it dense, you know, material matter is dense, there is, again, back to this chthonic Venus idea, that there is so much beauty and magic in things that we build from the earth and build with our hands.
I think of it similarly to like the way that I pray the rosary, right? Like you have the beads and you touch them and it's about repetition. So a lot of weaving, sewing, crafting magic is about discipline and repetition in that very specific way of like, you need to count. Like if people have ever crocheted versus knitting, there's so much counting all the time. And I don't think that people quite get that amount of focus and counting to make different shapes, but it's the same thing of knowing like you have to do 3 stitches this way and then 2 this way and then 3 and then 2. And so the numbers are starting to play into that too, in the same way that like as you pray, you know which things happen with your fingers. Like you can kind of touch them and know how to like move through the rosary the same way that you're doing that with stitching.
Yes. Oh, wow. I've never thought about that before because I do needlepoint. I don't do crochet. But if I were to do crochet, it would be a much better practice of discipline, especially as a person with ADD who has a hard time concentrating and like I can do things with my hands without paying attention to what I'm doing. But if I have to count, if I like have to retain that focus, then I can also retain the intention and like the reason why I'm even doing this. Because if I'm doing needlepoint, I literally have to like say the mantra out loud or I am prone to getting distracted and losing the intention altogether.
It's a practice, right? Like in the same way that you can pray without thinking over time, you can start to do stitching without thinking. Like there's moments where I know I have to really focus and concentrate because I'm creating a shape. And that's the deal. Like this is building. This is sculpture in a very awesome, soft way. But every row is a different additive property to that sculpture. So you need to know if you need to expand it or contract it or move it. And besides like the head and the body, at this point, I just make up everything. So any of the detail work, I'm kind of visualizing what it should look like and shaping it as I go.
Yeah.
But that takes that focus of like, you need to expand in these 2 points and then push in this point and then expand 2 more times. And then I can just do it in circles for 10 minutes and then I have to expand again and then contract again. So it becomes building. Like it's building with yarn rather than with clay or with any kind of harder material. But the way that you do that is through counting and thinking and like structurally envisioning something as you're doing it.
I mean, to design is math, and math is the quintessential language of the cosmos. So it is a very much being in tune with the universal consciousness in that way.
And shape, right? Like shape and how shape has form and how it like that form dictates function. They're not functional things, you know, like they're stuffed animals at the end of the day. But the shape has a different plane that it has to be in this space so that they can be in the physical body that they want to be in. So even like the last one that I made was the raccoon, and I just got those cheeks wrong 4 times. Because raccoons' cheeks are behind like their faces almost, like by their ears rather than up front where you think the cheeks are supposed to be. But he wouldn't let me give it up, right? Like it's not like I could say, like, this is it, you're going to have to be okay. It was a moment of like, no, this is important because the form is important for what I need to look like because I'm not a badger, I'm a raccoon. So you have to kind of keep going back and forth with that spirit contact plus form and shape plus like meditation and number counting and knowing the patterns, because it's about patterns too, that all of those have to come together for the physical body, and then you can put everything else inside.
Yes, because if the vessel is not the correct shape for what's trying to fill it, then the spirit can have too much room and not know what to do with itself, or be squished and feel really uncomfortable, and it wants to just be snug in its form, not too tight or too loose.
And there's like visual aspects to it too, right? Like everything that I make has to be visually consistent from across the room. You have to know that's a rooster, not like a penguin. There's differences.
Yes.
And those differences actually do make a difference when you think about the function of the animal. Like, none of their shapes or colors or whatever are non-intentional. They're designed through God or creation or, like, evolution, whatever that is, right? Like, every piece of that animal has a designated function. You kind of can't skip out on it because that's their body, right? Like, that's the way that they function in the world and what they mean and how that meaning gets mapped into spiritual meaning and what that animal can take on. Like, it all kind of fits back together.
Yeah, I love how in a way that kind of hits the head on some trans issues as well, because it's like we want our soul to fit within our body. So it's something that even we as humans can relate to, even though, you know, we are not spirits that asked someone to make a home for us. Who knows? Maybe we did before we were birthed into this life, you know? And maybe there was some misshapings or the wrong soul got put into the wrong body for whatever reason. And
I think of it a lot more as gender expression too, right? Like, you can look the way that you want to look to function in the world the way that you would like to function.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a powerful tool that we have. Like, there is a way to look the way that you want to look to get the message that you want to send across to everyone in the world without having to say anything to them.
Yes, so beautiful. I love this. I think what you were saying about needing to be able to notice what kind of animal it is from across the room, that kind of plays the same thing into gender expression as well, because we want, the reason why gender expression is so important is because it affects the way that others treat you. And so if you don't look like how you feel, then the other is going to treat you differently than what you may want to receive.
And even internally, it just doesn't feel right. You know, like, and that's part of my whole vibe. Like, I wear makeup, I wear perfume, I do get my nails done all the time because it makes me feel good. This is who I am, and I am cisgendered, and I love, like, it's just, everyone's like, oh, wait, you can be, like, more this or more that. I'm like, nope, I like being super girly. It makes me happy. And, like, all of these things in my life, I like showing my boobs. It's a thing. That's okay. Like, that's how I feel the most comfortable. And it's usually not for anyone but me. Like, I have a partner, and I adore him, and sometimes it's for him. But, like, I really do, really, really do like looking this way for me. And I wish that more people could do that for themselves, too. Like, rather than it being this external judgment thing of, like, I want to signal this and broadcast it. Yes, you can do that. But if you don't have that inner core that matches, like, I love the way that I look, I love feeling this way when I see myself, then it doesn't matter what other people are doing. Like, then that's just masking. Like, you're putting on a mask to try to just say something to someone so that you don't have to deal with how you look to yourself. But that's not fun. That's also not exactly healthy, like, trying to play to other people before even figuring out how you want to be for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great.
And I think actually that is something that Venus teaches you that I think most people don't realize, especially because when a lot of, you know, femmes will start working with Venus, she will be like, wear the perfume, put on the makeup, get the nails done. But, you know, I identify as non-binary, and I also incidentally really upped my game with Venus work last year as well. And it really actually made me more comfortable with the fluidity between the two.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. It just made me feel more comfortable in my own skin, right? And presenting how I felt like presenting that day without being nervous about how other people would respond. It's like some days I wake up and I do want full makeup and fancy perfume and I want to be in my nicest dress. And other days I just like want to be in overalls and like kind of give off a bit of a more masculine presentation. And it working with Venus has really removed any moment of looking in the mirror and being like, my gender is wrong.
I love her for that. I love her for the, not the external love as much as the self-love.
Me too.
how do you just sit with yourself and enjoy yourself? Like, that Friday nights are a blast around here just because it's that thing, right? It's that, like, I am here, I am in my body, I am in my skin, and it kind of doesn't matter who else is here because nobody else is here. It's just me, and it's great. Like, let's just lean all the way into this.
Yes.
And let it happen. So I think aesthetics are also a powerful form of magic that people kind of miss or skip because it doesn't seem as important. But I think that that's part of where the animals come in too. Like, their aesthetic is as important to them as the quality of fiber that they're made with, or like the colors, or what goes inside of them. All of it comes together as this one whole package that they need to feel good inside of themselves, as you were saying, because that's the work that they need to do for other people too.
Yeah, Venus touches every sphere, and I think this is a good example of that, because it's like spirits, whether it be a familiar or it be a ghost, you know, they all are affected by Venus and need Venus in their life just as much as we do in the material, because she is. She's the life giver and the death giver and the ocean of everything that creates. I mean, I know, like, in Buddhism, the point is to stop having your desires, but that even just kind of further emphasizes how the self is very much constructed around what we desire. And Venus work in particular can help you mitigate what is a healthy desire, like what's truly yours, what you truly want, versus what other people made you think you want.
Or want for you. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And you do that with that is like a part of the work you do with the squish babies, because like you said, it's very much what they want, not what you or anyone else expects them to want.
And it's giving over that control and trusting them with it too, right? Like, I have control over my hands and my time, right? Like, I can say, no, I can't do this right now, because I have to do other things in my life that's not this. But it's really cool to trust them that they are being made in their own way, in their own time, for their person. I think the fastest one I've ever done was in 3 days. It was a weird moment where I was like, oh, it's happening right now, and we have to do this right now. So I just didn't sleep for 2 nights and finished him.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh my God, because what people don't realize, even with my little needleworks, like, that can sometimes, you know, for just the simple personalized sigils, 5 hours. For the larger decorative pieces, it can take 30 hours. Like, weaving is time consuming.
It takes over your life.
So 3 days.
It was 3 days. It was the panda. It was a 3-day panda where I was like, oh, this is happening. This is just happening. Cool. 3 days?
And did you feel tired, or were you able to kind of go into this space where you couldn't even think about how tired you were because you were just...
Oh, no. This panda kicked my butt. Like, it was real. It had to happen, and it had to happen quickly, and I had to buy yarn in the middle of it because I ran out, and I was like, okay, sure.
Rush over to Michael's real quick.
Yeah, exactly. It was one of those moments where I was like, this is just happening. Okay, cool. 3-day panda. I won't talk to anyone for 2 days. Bye, y'all. 3-day panda's happening. Like, it has to happen sometimes that way. Not how I like working personally, but it can become consuming, especially in those last couple days. Like, sometimes it'll be a whole day of just finishing a body because it just takes time. Like, they take a lot of time. I think I may spend about 100 hours on each of them.
Oh my gosh. And I thought that my 50-hour needle points were a lot.
It's just a size thing, right? Like, if you think about how many stitches go into all of them, like, the head is so many stitches just on its own. There's a lot that has to happen for shape building.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, expand. I think I start with 6 stitches in the beginning circle and then have to expand into, like, 50 by the biggest point, and then go back down to 6. It just takes time. It takes time. You have to think about it. And you can't necessarily, I can't have conversations while I'm doing it unless I know really the shape that I'm making and I don't have to think about it. But I can have on stuff in the background that I don't watch.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I can listen to stuff.
Yeah, and I, even when I do my stitches, if I have something going on in the background, I like to think about the way that sound and vibrations affect magic. So if I am doing a magical working, even if I am watching TV, like, I make sure that what I'm watching is somehow relevant to the intention of what I'm doing, because I just want to make sure that the sound in the room is actually affecting the working in a positive way.
That's what they do. That's exactly what they do. I have watched so many shows that I've never been interested in watching. I never wanted to watch, like, just because the animal is requiring this kind of soundscape in the background, or like this kind of story or this kind of plot. And I think weaving and knotting is so tied to storytelling too. Like, those traditions are so close. And they're so interwoven, even though it's moving. Oh, wow. But they're so interwoven that, like, the stories make a difference in the background.
I mean, so that whole, like, stories and how much time it makes keeps making me think, like, I know we've talked some about how this process is very Venusian, but I also very much think about stitch witching as a Saturnine thing.
Honestly, like, if you really sit with it long enough, Mars is a friend, and it's a very weirdly martial exercise. You're stabbing stuff over and over again and pulling it through, especially, I ended up calling it surgery day now, where I have a whole, like, litter of body parts on my desk, and it looks really weird. Like, if you want to talk about chthonic, like, it gets really, really dicey sometimes, where you just see, like, a head, and then a body, and then legs, and, like, a feather over there, and you're like, this all has to come together at some point. Like, there is that moment that's very martial, where you're stabbing something over and over again and twisting its body parts to get it to be the right form, but it's just constructing instead of deconstructing. And the Saturn part of it, where it's the time, like, you have the time and the discipline, like, you have to stay in it. Mercury comes through an awful lot. Like, a lot of them end up being Mercury animals, like, just because of that, like, space and that being able to travel and talk to and communicate with a bunch of different other things. The moon is huge too. Like, that liminal space and that birthing space is so lunar. Like, I could do all of these. Like,
okay, well, do Jupiter, because I'm wondering about Athena as Weaver as being birthed from Jupiter's head. And that's, like, the one that I actually have a bit of trouble reconciling.
I think with Jupiter specifically, a lot of that is about the expansion and contraction pieces for me. Like, that shape ends up being that Jupiter focus of, like, how do you make something, create, right? Like, you're creating this world almost, and that expansion piece and, like, knowing what that shape looks like as you're expanding it is very dense sometimes when they're being made, especially when you're thinking about stuffing it too. That weird moment of flat, and then you stuff it and it expands and the shape forms in a different way. Like, that kind of pulling is that very, like, Jupiter vibe for me. And, like, they also just bring in joy in a different way. Like, it's, they have that kind of playfulness about them too. I sit alone and think about this a lot. Can you tell?
I can. That's exactly why I thought you would be perfect to have for this particular topic. So we're getting towards the end of our time. So I just want to ask one last question. Do you have any advice for, no matter what their level of practitioner is, beginner stitch witches?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yes. Yes. If it's not right, start over.
Oh, I like that one. Don't be afraid to undo the weaving and try again.
Exactly. Right? Like, you have that feeling when you know it's going the wrong way, but you've already put so much time into it and so much effort and intention, and it just doesn't feel right. If it's not right, it's not right. So just stop. don't make yourself push past that feeling because it's never going to turn out the way that you want it to. Stop what you're doing. It's not worth it. It's not worth continuing if it doesn't feel right.
Yeah. No, I actually have horror stories about that kind of thing because it will mess up the entire piece. And you may think to yourself, oh, it's not a big deal. But when you do everything else right and you've spent 100 hours on something and you look at it and that flaw is just glaring at you in the face, then you regret the 100 hours that you put in.
Exactly. Like, it's worth it to stop then and fix it and correct it. It is so much better than getting all the way to the end and being like, I wish I would have just stopped, or now this isn't right. And you waste more time trying to, like, overcome that flaw than you do just stopping and correcting it the first time.
And just like, since we are talking about using stitching as like a magical tool or like a carrier of magical intention, do you feel like when there are flaws in the design that even if you did everything else of the working correct, like perfect intention and thought and meditation the whole way through, that there will be more chaos? The magic itself isn't able to flow cleanly.
That's a good question. I think there's like happy accident flaws where you love them, right? That does happen. Where something happens and you're like, this is not what I thought was going to happen. This is not where this was going, but I like it. And that sitting with that moment of like, do you like it or not? Are you satisfied? Is this where it wants to go? Or should it be something different? Like, that's where the mediumship part comes in too, right? Like, is this accident not actually an accident, but something that my hand did to get me closer to the thing that it should be? Or is this something that's stopping the flow?
And how do you tell? Do you tune into like a feeling where if you feel it in your stomach, you know that's your own anxiety, versus if you feel it in your heart, that's like the animal saying, please undo it?
I think with the animals specifically, they are so involved in the entire process that I know from them how they're supposed to look. So if I keep going and I know it's not right, then that's on me. Like, I know I'm doing that to them, and then I feel bad. But I think if it's for my other work that I do, like any stitching stuff or creating or something, like, there's a pushback. I call it resistance. Like, there's this moment of resistance where you know this is not right. Like, you just have that feeling where you kind of don't want to keep going. And if you push past that resistance, that's on you. So that's the thing, right? We all have that feeling. We all have that feeling where it's like, this is not exactly quite right. You have to listen and fix it then, versus that feeling of like, this isn't right, but this is awesome. Like, and you know the difference. You know the difference in yourself, in your core. You can feel those two differences. One's creativity and one is just the wrong direction. So being able to discern between those two and not get caught up in the material version of it, which is like, I have spent so much time and effort and energy and yarn and whatever, and that's why I can't correct this. Got to get out of your own way. Yeah. And know that it's not serving the purpose.
Well, I think that's amazing advice. Definitely something I wish I'd heard, because like I said, I have made this mistake before. Well, this was such a joy, Sydney. This made me very happy. And I think what you're doing is so crazy cool and fantastic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. This is my first time being on a podcast, too. So this is fun and new for me.
Well, it was really my pleasure.
Yeah.
And I hope more people are able to find their animals now through this.
That would be awesome. The form is online. It's on my website, ladymelandra.com. And there's like an animal adoption link so that you can see the form. You can fill it out. You don't have to fill it out, but it does get you a heads up for like the next animals that are being made.
Perfect. Yeah, and I can even add that link in the show notes along with your Instagram.
Oh, sure. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, easy access for people. Well, all right. I am going to go ahead and shut this down, but it was such a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.